The first thing I want to acknowledge is my partner in crime, Dr. Wagenbach. He made a very significant contribution to this work, and I want to be sure to acknowledge that. Okay. Most of you are well aware that in the southern high plains, particularly in Oklahoma and some of the surrounding states, weed is used primarily as a dual-purpose forage and grain crop, but that type of management may not apply or be applicable throughout other regions of the country or even in neighboring states. But in the Oklahoma system, one of the key objectives is to maximize the fall growth of forage, particularly so that producers have a place to go with their stock or cattle after they're weaned. Most of you know that I worked in Oklahoma and Arkansas for a time, and Arkansas is one of those places that is totally unlike Oklahoma with respect to cereal grain production. Grain production in Arkansas is almost exclusively in the Mississippi River Delta, while forage production is in the northern and western parts of the state, which is where the cattle are. One of my last graduate students there, Johnny Gonzalez, did a study where he evaluated cereal grain forages that were established in the fall, and he found that anything that will elongate in the fall will out-yield something that remains vegetative by approximately 2-to-1 before winter. Obviously, when you move to Wisconsin, you have a little bit different animal model. The needs are somewhat different as well. Extending the grazing season is important regardless of what kind of an animal model you have. But in Wisconsin, there can be need for a late season silage crop, either because of an emergency due to drought or just routinely. And the last one that I have listed there is actually quite important. A lot of producers do have a need for a site in the middle of summer to spread manure. This could be a really important issue if you have most of your acreage in corn or alfalfa. So this offers some potential in that respect as well. Our objectives were to evaluate the fall growth potential of 8 cereal grain cultivars selected for use in the north central United States, and then to assess their nutritive value with particular emphasis on energy density. In terms of procedures, we used no-till establishment in early August of 2006 and 7 at Prairie du Sac, Wisconsin, which is in the south central part of the state. We used fairly traditional seeding rates for wheat, triticale, and oat. Modest fertilization was applied at the time of planting, and we had 3 harvest dates, mid-September, early October, and then 1st of November. To give you some perspective, that mid-September date is sort of about the time that you might consider starting to graze those forages. Now, depending on the cultivar that you're looking at, that could be early or late, and it's also influenced by the season. The November 1 date is basically a maximum yield date. Okay, a brief description of the cultivars that we looked at. We had 5 oat varieties. 3 of them were grain types, 2 were forage types. And I think it's important here to note, and this is important throughout the rest of the talk, that there is approximately a 2-week difference in heading date between those 5 oat varieties, with the grain types being more aggressive in terms of maturation than the forage types. We did have 2 traditional wheat types, winter wheat types in there, as well as 1 triticale. Of course, the wheat does not elongate in the fall. In terms of statistics, we had a split plot design in this study. Cultivars were the whole plots, subplots were 3 harvest dates. We had 4 replications, and our analysis was by year with mean separation by orthogonal contrast. I did want to say one brief word about weather. There are 2 conditions, based on my limited work in this area, that will really increase fall yield when you apply this type of management. You need a certain amount of water in August and early September to get these things up and growing. The second thing that's really helpful is to have a mild October so that you don't have a number of real hard freezes that shut these plants down. If you'll notice the blue bars, which were 2007, we had an awful lot of rain in August, And we also had a very mild October, and that becomes real obvious when you look at the yield data. This slide is quite busy, but I did want to give you some kind of a picture of what these plants looked like at the time they were harvested. In 2006, we did not have any variety in this trial that exhibited a seed head. In 2007, growth was more advanced, and we did get a couple of the grain type oats to shoot visible seed heads. The wheat, of course, remained vegetative on all dates. The numbers in parentheses to the right of the EL, which indicates that it's elongated, is the number of nodes I was able to palpate on that particular harvest date. Okay, in terms of yield, there are a couple things I want to point out. I've condensed this down to five entries that kind of illustrate the total range of what we looked at. Number one, within variety, there was both linear and quadratic effects of harvest date in all cases. And that's not terribly surprising. Basically, what that means is you got increased yield on each harvest date, and the differential between the first two dates was far greater than the second two great dates. And that's to be expected. I think the more important point to note is that within these oat varieties, you get a depression in yield that's associated with delayed maturation. And we saw this throughout the trial, and I'll point that out as we continue to go through this. 2007, we got basically the same kinds of responses that we saw the year before, except that we got really impressive yields. And this particular Ogle oat variety, I mean, that's about a 10-ton silage equivalent there, harvested the 1st of November, and that's obviously very attractive. I wanted to include a couple pictures here just to kind of give you a visual representation of what these look like. One thing I do want to point out specifically, this picture was taken on the 30th of October 2006, which is our final harvest date. This is an oat plot here. What you'll notice here in this stubble, that was the plot that was clipped on October the 7th, which was the preceding date. If you're going to go to this kind of a system, it's important for producers to know that once those oat varieties joint and start to elongate in the fall, there's essentially no potential for regrowth. It's barren after that. So that's something that has to be kept in mind. There are some very interesting things that occur with respect to quality. If you look at the numbers here, this is NDF for these same five varieties. If you'll recall from the yield, there is a substantial yield increase between the second and third harvest date. However, the NDF concentration actually declines during that time period, which is a pretty unique situation. you also notice that in 2006, I mean, the NDF content of none of these varieties was very high. In 2007, you get a similar kind of pattern, really. There's very little difference in the NDF concentration of any of these forages between the second and third harvest dates, even though there was fairly significant yield increases as well as more mature plants, which is really attractive because it indicates a fairly stable level of quality, which allows a producer a broader window to utilize these forages. I don't intend to go through all these contrasts comparing the different types of entries that we had in here. What I wanted to make was one general comment, and that is that on this mid-September jointing kind of a harvest date, there's not necessarily a lot of differentiation in quality between any of these things. In 2007, it was a little further advanced, so you did see a little bit of difference. But basically, for most of the quality indices that we looked at, this is kind of what we found. But as you get deeper into the fall, then they really do differentiate pretty clearly. I wanted to mention lignin as well. In 2006, which is the top graph, we basically had very little lignin in any of these plants, less than 1%. On all harvest dates. In 2007, we did have quite a bit of lignin relative to 2006, particularly in these two grain type oat cultivars. However, That's still not a great deal of lignin, and if you compare it or express it as a percentage or proportion of the total NDF, it's very low relative to what the same thing would be if you planted them traditionally in the spring. So this gives you a lot of potential, I think, for increased adjustability. As we said before, I'm not going to go through all these, but I do want to point out that in September, you don't see a whole lot of differentiation. As you get into the later harvest dates, these different types do separate themselves. I think most people here are familiar with the summative equation for TDN, which is used pretty commonly in the dairy industry. And I want to finish up by just touching on this. If you look at these graphs, this one is for 2006 for Kaskaskia wheat, which remained vegetative. You'll notice that there's actually a linear increase designated by these broad bars across harvest dates, an increase in energy content. However, when you look at the individual components that make that up, truly digestible non-fiber carbohydrate, crude protein, or fiber, you'll notice that there's a declining contribution from crude protein, which makes some sense because that concentration is also declining. There's an increase in the contribution from non-fiber carbohydrate or sugar. And during 2007, you see many of the same trends, declining contribution from crude protein, some increase from non-fiber carbohydrate, and there was more fiber in these plants in 2007. So you see an increased contribution from them as well. The Ogle oat was the most advanced forage at the time of harvest in 2006. There's a declining contribution again from crude protein, strong contribution from non-fiber carbohydrate, and the total overall TDN actually increased across harvest dates. In 2007, you see somewhat similar trend, except there was a lot more fiber in this particular year that was not heavily lignified, and you wound up with a really large contribution from digestible fiber. So to close, number one, any cultivar such as oat that elongates during the fall will consistently deliver about a 2-to-1 advantage in yield over wheat or any other cereal grain that does not elongate. Grain type oat cultivars that mature more rapidly than forage types when they're established in the spring will typically out yield forage types in the fall. And the last point is the quality characteristics of these forages are very, very stable throughout the fall, and this provides a producer with a pretty broad window of opportunity for usage. And with that, I'm done.
Light stand. Working on it. Thanks, sir. We have time for just a couple questions.
Yes.
Do you think from an economic standpoint that it would be good to plant an oat-wheat blend, harvest the oats out of the way, graze the wheat through the winter to increase tillering, and then harvest the wheat in spring on planting?
That's probably something that could be looked at. Maybe I should repeat the question.
If you would, please.
He asked whether I should plant. These should be planted in a blend such that you wouldn't have to replant in the spring and you would have perhaps wheat in there that would provide grazable type forage. Within the context of Wisconsin and a Wisconsin dairy producer, I don't think they're really worried about that. If they're going to do this, they're going to put it in a silo sometime in mid to late October, and they're not going to be terribly concerned about the spring. Now, there are some grazers there that might consider that to be something of relevance, but there's nothing to say that you can't go back in there and plant that again in the spring. And I would think they might be more inclined to do that in a lot of respects. Now, in other environments, that might be something you want to look at.
Time for one more.
Where we are in Marshfield in central Wisconsin, when you don't have time for an intermediary crop between a spring or carryover cereal grain, some kind of a sorghum sedan like he was talking about, and then a cereal grain, you don't have time for that. It would be either cereal grain to cereal grain, or after something like this, you would go to corn or something in the spring. In the following spring, you could put it. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Wayne.